Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Rolling. Nickety Need, Nima V, what's up?
Yeah, how's it going, Michael?
Good. Happy summer, man.
I know, it's beautiful. I love the summer. It's definitely my favorite season.
Summer started Tuesday, and I was so busy I didn't notice till the next day.
Yeah, I was at work, and I was on my way through a metal detector to go into court for a story. And somebody was like, yeah, first day of summer. And I was like, oh, yeah, awesome. So, yeah, I'm always a big fan of summer. I'd rather I'd be too hot than too cold any day.
Tomorrow is July 1st. It's the first day of permitless concealed carry in Wyoming.
Oh, right, because the new law goes into effect. That's awesome.
I'm wondering if the commie Red Star newspaper will remind people of it or hope they'll forget.
That is a very interesting question. And you should definitely come back and tell us what they end up doing. I'd be very interested to know.
I will.
How have they been covering it the whole time? I mean, did they run a hit piece on it before it was passed?
Oh, yeah. They said there'll be blood in the streets. And
really?
You know, the comments are about the politicians here are like, the inmates are running the asylum.
Wow. Who did they get to quote when they were talking about how there would be blood in the streets? Or did it just seem like was it an editorial? Or did they find some expert, quote-unquote experts to talk about it?
No, I'm basing it on editorials and on comments.
Yeah.
The editorial from the editor of the paper was like, this is a bad idea. I'm not anti-gun, but there should be reasonable restrictions in place. And, you know, then the comments were all like, oh, typical Wyoming, the inmates are running the asylum.
Really? Yeah. Comments, especially on newspaper and news sites, can be really horrible, though. I mean,
well, you gotta think about who has time to sit and answer those all day. And it used to be, if you wrote a letter to a paper, you had to write a letter and you had to hope that they'd print it. And now it's just commenting, which I'm not saying is worse. It's probably better. It is better. But it's like, there's, at least on that paper, I know that there's about four really statist liberal people who probably do 50% of the posting on there.
Right,
and I think that they're, you know, I'm guessing that they're like on SSI and disabled or retired or, you know, have nothing better to do.
Nothing better to do. And then there's a layer of anonymity that I think aids to what people are willing to say in a comment section. I mean, I've noticed on stories here, it seems like the commenters where I'm at don't have any concept of innocent till proven guilty. Like, as soon as we report that somebody's charged with anything, even if it's marijuana, they talk about how we should ship all the gangsters off to an island and nuke it, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah. And, I don't really like that anonymity. I mean, I guess it would make sense in a place where they can drag you off and kill you for posting something, but I always post everything on the internet, either with my real name or with a username that if you do a Google search, my real name comes up.
Right, right. I think it's a social thing. I mean, I trust somebody more if they're willing to not be anonymous. I mean, obviously they're going to say something and back it up with, you know, this is, I personally approve this message kind of thing. If somebody's anonymous and just spouting off nonsense, I'm less likely to buy their argument.
And people say shit on the internet using fake names and anonymous names that, you know, would get them punched on any street in the world. I mean, they're safe in their mother's basement behind their screen.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
People tend to be ruder.
Yeah.
I had a couple interesting things this week. Oh, by the way, I'm podcasting with my window open, so y'all can hear the Wyoming wind in the background. It's just kind of stuffy here. So I had some great comments, and we had some great comments this week. I had the meanest comment I've ever had on the internet, and it was so absurd, it just rolled off my back. I was like, it didn't even bug me. You know, far less snitty comments it bugged me. It was, there's a video on YouTube of me singing this song by Leonard Cohen. It's a Leonard Cohen song called Hallelujah. It's a really beautiful, really sad song.
Right, it's from Shrek.
it's used in a lot of movies. It's used in Lord of War, too.
Okay.
But
it's a good song.
It is a good song. And when my daughter died, part of me mourning her was singing that song and having me videoed singing it up in a field on a hilltop in California.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's a beautiful thing, definitely.
And somebody posted, "Hallelujah, she's not going to heaven. She's going to hell because she's white race."
Wow. In response to your daughter, because there were pictures of her on there, weren't there?
Yes.
That's insane. Yes. Yeah. I know. What was the name of the commenter? Was
it like, I don't know.
That's just insane.
I blocked him. I was just like, f*** this.
So did you respond at all? Like, what the hell is your problem?
No. It just, I don't even want to be in the head of someone like that.
Yeah. You do see a lot of really, not raunchy, just stuff that makes you almost want to gag on YouTube. You know, racist.
YouTube's the worst. YouTube's the worst because it's, you know, the people that comment on there are all like 15, I think. Which isn't, you know, not that 15-year-olds are bad, but they tend to not have been out in the real world a lot where they have to deal on their own without their parents' backup, and they're frustrated, they're bullied, whatever, so they go bully someone else. But it was just, it was mind-blowing.
Yeah. Do you think that's what it is in YouTube? You think it's the youth? Are you showing your age there?
Yeah.
It's those damn kids that are too stupid.
Goddamn kids. We should ship them off to war. Yeah. Thin out their ranks.
That never really crossed my mind that it was a youth thing. I always just thought, you know, it shows some of the dregs of society. And
the literacy level on YouTube is way lower, but that could be because it's people from other countries where English is their second language a lot, too. But
yeah, you can kind of tell, though. You can tell if it's somebody who's struggling with English and somebody who just is retarded.
There were some hater comments from Nancy and Jane. Remember Nancy and Jane?
I have no idea who Nancy and Jane are, no.
Nancy and Jane are the names of the two guys that we talked about on one podcast and on debunking haters of liberty.
Oh yeah, and you gave them chick names. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, there was my friend, my spy, told me that they had a thread on Facebook. I can't see it because we've all blocked each other. But it was something like one of them said, "Every day I wake up in California is a good day," and one of them said, "Every day Michael Dean wakes up not in California is a good day for him," and then the other one said, "Every day Michael Dean wakes up not in California is a good day for me, too."
Wow, haters. Yeah, that's when you know they're haters. When you guys haven't even spoke for months.
Oh, years. Like a decade, man.
Well, I mean, I know they were originally haters, but it's haters even more that, you know, months after we talked about it. Because you think they ever heard the podcast?
I don't think they ever heard the podcast. How would they?
They just have this insane thing to where they talk about somebody they used to know for some reason.
Yep. It's jealousy. We talked about that. And we got another good comment on YouTube about you. Someone said, the guy rapping is Taliban.
I did see that. You sent me that. No, it was the guy rapping is a Taliban.
Is a Taliban. And I replied,
"I am a Taliban."
And I said, "Not at all. Nima opposes all tyranny, and it's kind of racist for you to say so. Not all Middle Eastern young men with beards and AKs are evil."
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to the literacy thing we were talking about. Yeah, I'm a Taliban. I don't even know what it means to be a Taliban. But
I mean, it's like you and I, visually and what we say, you know, we're not bad guys, but to the left and the right, we're each the worst, you know, to the right, you're Taliban, and to the left, I'm middle-aged, plump, white guy who lives in the hills with too many guns and doesn't trust the government.
You think that's it? We attract the worst of each side?
Yeah.
I hope
that's
not.
That's our strength. You know, we were talking about John Wilkes Booth a while back, and there's something that I learned recently that I didn't know, was that John Wilkes Booth was one of the most or the most popular stage actors in America. Did you know that?
So he was like the Brad Pitt of his time.
It'd be like if Brad Pitt killed a president, you know?
What would you think about that? That would be like the biggest story of all time if Brad Pitt shot Obama.
Well, it's weird because usually the people that do high-profile killings of anybody are really, really nobodies, you know?
Yeah.
They're nobodies with nothing to lose. Like, you know, the guy that blew up the federal building, like one of his big complaints in his life was that he couldn't get a girlfriend. And he was a really good looking guy, but he didn't have the social skills to get a girlfriend. And Jared Loughner had a lot of problems getting girlfriends. And, you know.
So it's all just sexual repression that's making people do things like that? The thing about John Wilkes Booth, you never really hear much about the Lincoln death story. I mean, it's like one paragraph in a history textbook that you read once in eighth grade. And then, I mean, nobody covers it. There's no documentary about it. It's not on the History Channel 24/7 like something that, like the Hitler suicide would be.
Actually, there was a History Channel thing about it.
Ah, was there? Well, I guess I don't have TV, so I can't comment on
it. It was an interesting and complicated plot, and it involved more assassins and more people like the vice president and the secretary of state who they didn't get to. You know, the guy William Seward, who I used to live in his house, he was targeted for assassination too. But as soon as Lincoln was killed, everybody circled their wagons. So,
So how did it happen? Was he walked up behind him after the show? I thought it was during the show. But was he an actor in the show at the time?
I don't think so. That'd be weird. People think it was part of the play.
Yeah. Like he goes out into the... Maybe Lincoln was heckling him.
Well, that's the skit you talked about.
Yeah, that's the whitest kids in the room. Yeah, maybe that's really what happened.
Do you think it's ironic that the first black American president is bombing the hell out of Africa?
Yes. That thought has totally crossed my mind. Yeah. I can just imagine Obama, you know, growing up with a Kangol and a little Africa pendant. Now he's bombing Libya.
Because he probably got beat up for wearing that Africa pendant.
Probably. He probably used to dress like Gaddafi, and he's a little bit insane about it now. Yeah, the whole Libya thing just strikes me as so insane. I mean, it's just, if you want any more proof that we're in bizarro world, it's all right there. Especially all the Orwellian gymnastics when it comes to talking about it and the War Powers Act. It's not a war, it's a kinetic military action. And then this was the real beautiful one, saying that there's no hostilities because there's no way anybody in Libya could actually hit us with a bullet or anything. No way they can fight back, so it doesn't count as hostilities.
It's not a war because we're just killing them.
Yeah, we're just random. Just killing them. There's no way they could kill us.
Well, I hate saying we. We're not killing them.
Right. The government.
So read this description of this book called Emily's Debt. I think it's like kink erotica for Alex Jones fans.
You think that's a new book? That's their target audience, huh?
I don't know, man, but read it. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I did read this earlier, and I don't even know how you want me to read this, but we'll go ahead.
Just read the description.
In the very near future, where failing to pay debts was a crime, Emily is in big trouble. She has a large student loan and no job. She's heard, of course, that debtors were sent to jail. Instead, they're rented to corporations and businesses so that their work can help pay off their debts. But renting becomes purchasing. And crafty lawyers and greedy companies turn debt bondage into slavery with hardly anyone paying attention. Now sold to a former classmate, a sadistic lawyer eager to test the boundaries of the law, Emily is a non-person, purchased property. And if her owner wants her to be nude in public, wants her to walk on all fours on a leash, well, it's not like she's a person anymore, not according to the law. And if he wants to whip her in public, well, that's all right, too.
Really, I think whoever wrote this has problems with lawyers.
Yeah, I felt very dirty reading that. I did not enjoy that at all.
Yeah, but it's a new genre, kink erotica for Alex Jones fans.
Yeah. I wonder if it comes with a dildo with a little pyramid with the eyeball on top.
Speaking of conspiracy theories and Freemasons and stuff, I ran across some really interesting stuff about Jefferson. Basically, I've never really known what to say when people say, what are my religious beliefs? And I kind of describe it, and it kind of comes out sounding like some hippie New Age bullshit, but it's not. And my wife said the other day, well, you're a deist, so am I. And I was like, what's that? And I went and looked it up, and I'm like, oh my God, this is exactly what I am.
So go ahead and describe it for us.
Yeah, deism is basically the watchmaker theory, like that. There is a supreme being that created the universe and set it in motion, but it doesn't intervene on a day-to-day basis. There are no miracles. There are no prayers answered. Everything's explainable by science or chance. And then I found out that Thomas Jefferson was a deist, which I thought was really cool. And he read all of the great religious books from, you know, the Old Testament to the New Testament to Native American things to... he had a copy of the Quran. I remember somebody... The one Muslim congressman actually swore in on Jefferson's Quran.
Oh, wow.
And irked a bunch of people. But but Jefferson wrote this book, well, edited this book called The Jefferson Bible, which is basically he took the Christian Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, and he removed all of the miracles. and all of the supernatural things. And it's like a third as long. And he never published it during his life, but he gave copies to friends, and it was later published. And for a long time, it was given to new members of Congress when they were sworn in. It's a really bizarre concept to me, because a lot of Christians believe that altering the word of God, anything in the Bible, is a sin, based on the last two or three paragraphs of the Bible, of the book of Revelation. It basically says something like,
I think it says, if he who removes something from this book will have his name removed from the book of life, I guess implying they'll end up in hell.
He who adds anything to this book, so will be added the torments described in this book. He who removes anything from this book, so will God remove the blessings described. And I'm paraphrasing, which is, you know, a sin anyway. So, but that's basically it. And I think it's really bold that Jefferson did this. And it really makes me think about people who say, well, America's a Christian country. Thomas Jefferson was a Christian. No, he was a deist who followed the word of Christ and a bunch of other people.
If I recall, he wasn't the only deist when it comes to the founding fathers either.
I don't know. He was a Freemason, and a lot of Freemasons are deist. Not all Freemasons are deists, and not all deists are Freemasons,
right,
which is interesting, because there's a group on Facebook called the Anti-Deist Group, and it has like six members, and their logo is the back of the dollar bill, the pyramid with the all-seeing eye, upside down with a line, a red line through it, a banning line that says anti-deism, anti-Zionism. And I'm like, whoa, they're confused. First of all, like,
that is very confusing.
Most Zionists, religious Zionists, are not deists.
They're
Jewish and believe in miracles.
Yeah.
So, an intervention.
Of course. Yeah, I do see their logo now, and that's very interesting. Anti-deist movement. So, are they Christian, or are they just these
people who are scared of the occult? Some are Christian, and some are Muslim.
Right, right. Yeah, I think there is, you know, sort of this sense out there, especially online. There's all these sorts of conspiracy theories and the occult, and it gets almost confusing to keep track of all the different ones. I know there's a contingent out there that thinks Jay-Z, the rapper, is some kind of satanic bloodline thing. In fact, Jay-Z addresses it in one of his songs where he says, I said that I'm a Mason, not that I'm a Mason. So it actually has even caught his attention that people are saying these kinds of things. People have amazing imaginations, I guess. I'll just leave it at that.
Yep. I ran across an amazing, what I consider kind of a magical thinking conspiracy kind of thing. It's a book called The Red Amendment, and it's written by someone named L.B. Bork. And it's kind of got a cult following. It's basically kind of a sovereign citizen movement, although the author of it says there's no such legal designation as a sovereign citizen. It's based on the idea that the 14th Amendment was wrong and not ratified, so it's not legal. And the 14th Amendment covers a lot of stuff. It did good stuff. It gave citizenship to blacks, but it also allowed the expansion of the federal government.
It makes insurrections illegal. It's very pro-union, and it's almost like they slipped it in there with all this stuff about civil rights and due process.
Yeah,
kind of like they do now with bills. Yeah, it's very much something you would expect to be a post-Civil War amendment, basically saying now this is set in stone, this is settled, we're all one union, the states don't have the right to, you know, do their own thing, and people don't have the right to rebel, which is a flaw in very anti-liberty in ways. So I can see the motivation.
The theory that this L.B. Bork guy has is that it not only gave citizenship to blacks, it changed the citizenship of everyone from citizen of the United States to citizen of a corporation with the same name. I kind of buy that so far, maybe, but his whole take, as far as I can tell, I can't find a copy of the book to download, but he has an extensive website, and there are there's a forum, and there's people talking about it on other like tax scam and Better Business kind of scam sites. And basically what he says is that you could fill out paperwork, I believe, with the federal government and your state government, and maybe like publish it in the paper or something. I don't know how it works, but you can fill out paperwork and fix your citizenship. So you're no longer a citizen of that corporation, and you're a citizen of the country of your state. Like, you'd be a citizen of the country of Washington, and I'd be a citizen of the country of Wyoming, which it's just sounding like a magic trick at this point.
Yeah.
But even worse than that, he charges people like upwards of $1,000 to do the paperwork for him. He's not a lawyer. He tells people, don't talk to a lawyer about this.
almost like he's taking advantage of people's distaste for being U.S. citizens to
right. And, make cash. And basically, he seems to be claiming that if you do this, you're exempt from paying federal income tax.
Mm-hmm.
And like this girl argued with me about this. One of his disciples argued with me for like 128 posts about that it made her immune to federal laws. Like she lives in California, north of San Francisco. And I said, well, if this is true, can you strap on your sidearm with a 15-round mag and go open carry in San Francisco Civic Center? And she's like, I could if when the cops stopped me, I told them these certain words. And I'm like, right, good luck right. with that, man.
Yeah, that sounds like a scam. It sounds like that thing on porn sites that says the three magic questions to get women to sleep with you. I don't believe those three exist. There's no magic words or spell or incantation. This isn't Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's like I really don't think that there's anything that you can whisper that's going to get you out of.
And so I'm curious, though, what's his angle? Like, what kind of papers do these people end up filing, and where do they file them? And
you have to buy the book. Then that you have to pay $30 for the book and then pay him $750 to $1,000 to file them for you if you want it done right.
Can you do it yourself? Does it have a do-it-yourself guide that's very confusing so people end up
I don't know, man. His website is very much like websites for Viagra or something. They're very much like, well, we'll give you all the wonders of it, but then it all points to buy the book. And then what I've heard, once you buy the book all points to hire this non-lawyer to do some lawyer-like work for you.
Yeah. Sounds kind of bunk to me. I mean, obviously, we haven't bought or read the book, and so, again, we're reviewing a book without reading it.
We do it all the time, but if he wants to send us a copy to review, you know, I'll read it with an open mind and there then talk go. About what's wrong with it. Yeah.
I think this is sort of sidetracking people, too. I mean, if you really distrust and have this distaste for being a part of the federal government, which is completely understandable for a lot of people this day and age, then just opt out. I mean, be free for yourself. I don't think filing extra paperwork or anything like that is even necessary. It's all in your mind.
But still honor your – pay your bills. Of course. You know what's funny? Ever since we moved into this house and got this phone number, it's a phone number that someone had before. They didn't have it at this house. They had it somewhere else. You know, they move numbers around.
Uh-huh.
But the first like 6 months we were here, we got – 2 or 3 calls a day from collection agencies for somebody, for this husband and wife. And they tapered off, and it was like once every few months. And then we didn't get any for a long time. We got one the other day, and I realized that the name is the name of one of those sovereigns in town that's been in a lot of trouble for not paying their bills and stuff.
One of the dudes that has his name in the paper?
Actually wasn't in the paper, but he's in that mess of people.
Ah, got it.
The so-called sovereigns who, you know, have kangaroo courts.
Well, of course, when we talk about freedom, we're not talking about freedom from obligation or freedom from being a good person or being a good citizen. We just think that, you know, the state is a big institution of violence, and so we want to be free from that violence.
So there's a lawyer who likes our podcast and a judge who likes my user's manual book and a cop who liked our movie was at our movie showing in Philly.
Well, speaking of our movie showing, so there was a cop there that liked it. Go ahead and elaborate on that.
That's about all I know. I did a Skype video Q&A, and
did he have a question for you?
No, but somebody said, "Yeah, this guy's a cop, and he liked the movie." And the guy like raised his hand.
Nice. Well, there is that law enforcement group for pot legalization.
Right.
Maybe he's a member. And a judge likes your book?
Yeah, my self-help, libertarian self-help book, User's Manual for the Human Experience.
What kind of a judge? Like, do you know what level or?
I don't know. I know it's in Oklahoma. She's in Oklahoma. Friend of a friend.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what was the other one? A lawyer who listens to our podcast.
Yep. And likes
it. We should send a shout out.
Shout out to the lawyer who likes our podcast. I have a shout out that I really wanted to give was this guy that gave us a donation, our first donation ever, $50, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and, thanks a bunch.
We'd like more of those. You know, if we got enough,
obviously,
if we got enough of them, we'd do this twice a week. But we just can't afford the time to do it right now. But and he listened to every episode on the way out to Wyoming from San Francisco Bay Area. His name's Terrence. And I met him at the Free State Wyoming Jam, which was a
lot of fun. So you're narrowing it down. He's a lawyer from
No, he's not the lawyer.
Okay. No. Oh, this is the guy that gave us the donation.
Right, right.
Awesome.
Okay. Shout out to Terrence. Yeah, he walked up to me and said, "You're Michael Dean. I recognize you from the podcast." And he seemed a little starstruck. And he didn't know our movie or anything else. It was the first time I've had a fan like that from the cast. It was pretty cool. And he said he really digs both of us. And it's a nice change from the Alex Jones type stuff he usually listens to. He digs that we're more positive and fun.
Yeah, we're not trying to scare anybody.
Yeah.
We always say it. We're trying to laugh at the state. I do that all the time. My wife actually gets mad. I've almost become Dr. Hibbert when I'm talking about, you know, tyranny today and stuff like that. I'll always tell her, yeah, some people at the Jefferson Memorial were dancing and got body slammed to the ground by cops. And I'll give a chuckle and she'll just look at me like, that's not funny. That's horrible. Not that I want to laugh at others' misfortune. I just think that we don't need to be scared.
I think the people you're talking about were laughing about it. They challenged him to a dance-off.
Yeah, but we're laughing at them. We're not laughing because they're committing violence against us. We're laughing because the idea that they're going to be able to force us into cowering and becoming sheep again is, I think, ridiculous. I think the cat's out of the bag, and more people in the long run. I'm an optimist because I think that freedom is so logical that it just wins in the end.
Yeah. You know what I think someone needs to make? If there are any computer programmers out there, is like a plugin for your browser or a freestanding application that taps into Google Maps information and helps you map trips based on gun and drug laws.
That's smart. So there's not an app for that yet, is what you're saying.
No.
There definitely should be.
No.
Now, is there one for each individually? I could see there being one for, because, you know, there is that online map that'll tell you if your concealed carry permit is legal
right.
in different states.
What you'd have is you'd have a browser plugin that taps into database searches from that and from Google Maps and would just print you out like a, you know, mm-hmm. if you're open, and you'd be able to say whether you're open carrying or concealed carrying, whether you have a permit, what state it's from. And it would map you, you know, maybe the shortest or maybe most scenic route that avoids the problem states and gives you information on it. You know, for the marijuana part, they could tap into Norml, NORML.com.
Of course, their
site
of course.
Has all the pot laws.
And either way, even if they didn't route me, I think that'd be great to just have the map and I could route myself.
Yeah.
And to look at it and obviously decide where I'd like to take a vacation to in the first place.
So I got a tyranny today.
And now, the Nima News with Nima Vedati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
I got two of them.
Tyranny Today.
I got two of them. One is, Google is going to have to pay out that huge settlement to the Department of Justice over the drug ads.
So they've agreed to pay it, or?
I just saw it on CNN. Like, it's about to happen. They're like, we're going to have word in hours, and Google is expecting to have to pay.
Wow, I really hope that doesn't happen. Even if they're told to pay, I hope they do not pay.
Well, the funny thing about it was the liberal nanny staters on MSNBC were talking about it as a problem. Like, well, yeah, of course they should be fined, and saying
really,
you know, prescription drug abuse is one of the largest growing crimes in America, and I'm like, first of all, like. Not all of the things that those people were getting from pharmacies were stuff to get high. A lot of them were people who, you know, take drugs for cancer or high blood pressure or whatever, and they were getting them cheaper from Canada.
Well, how illogical is it in the first place to blame Google, who isn't actively? The only reason they're involved is because they're the network over which it happens. That'd be like, you know, suing the federal government because the interstates are used to transport drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't blame the feds for the fact that cartels can get crack up to – or cocaine all the way up to Canada.
Yeah. It's bizarre world. And the really bizarre thing was Wolf Blitzer was talking with this guy, and the guy was saying, you know, that and the places where prescription drug abuse and ordering it on the internet is the biggest is the places that have the fastest internet connections. And and I was thinking, like – wow, so like you want to have 10 round mag bans on internet speed or something to slow right. down, like, you know, you can only have a 1 megabit per second internet connection because otherwise you'll order drugs faster.
The movie and recording industries would love that too. You wouldn't be able to download or stream movies or music.
I know.
That'd be genius. And
the thing
that's,
is,
that's
too,
coming I've, next. You've planted the seed, Michael. Shame on you.
Shame. I think it's a false statistic though, because I think the reason that ordering drugs online is bigger in places with fast internet connection is there's more money in those places and people can afford it.
Well, I don't even think it's a causation like that. I just think, obviously, in the same place that you have people who want that higher speed internet, those are people who use the internet more in the first place. They're more tech
savvy. They want higher speed everything. That's why they need drugs.
Higher speed, speed, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Get higher on speed.
Okay, so the other tyranny today is, and this one almost affected me personally, Amazon Affiliates is a program where you can put links on things and on your website. Like whenever we mention a book on here or on my blog or anywhere, I put a link that has my unique Amazon user ID in it. And if somebody orders a $30 book on there, I get like 75 cents or something. And
yeah, it's an advertiser's fee basically.
Yeah. And I make like $300 a year doing that. I never cash it out. I just use it for Amazon points to buy other books. And I bought this t-shirt. This Guns Don't Kill People, The Government Does, Dale Gribble shirt that you can see I'm wearing. It's a handsome shirt, isn't it?
Hell yeah. Dale Gribble's a handsome man.
Yeah. And someone said I kind of starting to look like him. But there's that affiliate program, and then there's another thing where people can sell things on Amazon, sort of like eBay. Like basically, the mom and pop bookstores that haven't been driven out of business by Borders and Amazon, the few that are remaining, the way they're staying in business is not from walk-in traffic on the street. It's from doing mail order of used books.
Right.
And a lot of it's over Amazon. Some of it's eBay, other places. But so anybody that was selling anything, small businesses and people that were selling things on Amazon, Jerry Brown or whoever the governor of California is decided that he wanted to tax all of those transactions.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Whether there's a physical presence in the state or not. And Amazon's response was, we're not going to have anybody doing Amazon affiliates now in California.
Yeah.
And that's a huge state. And it's like, all of a sudden, there's these mom and pop businesses being driven out of business. It's going to more ruin the economy of California in something that was supposed to like get money for California. It's going to have an unintended consequence of less money for California.
Yeah, of course, obviously. You know. They're driving them out. And, you know, you see this on the federal level, too. When they raise tax rates, when they lower tax rates, it seems the tax revenue always stays about constant because taxes prevent people from wanting to do business wherever the taxes are higher. It's just common sense. In fact, I thought it was interesting in the Amazon letter that they sent out, it mentions that this has been tried in other states and doesn't even benefit the states who do this.
Yeah.
It doesn't provide any more tax revenue or negligible extra tax revenue, but it really affects people who make money. It has a negative net economic impact, and it's just bad policy. I mean, all government policy is obviously bad because it's at the barrel of a gun, but this is bad even by their standards, I think.
It nearly affected me because Amazon cut me off because when I started doing this, I had a California address. So I had to, yesterday, I had to fax them a copy of my driver's license.
To show them that you now live in a freer state.
Yeah, to get reinstated.
The California thing, that hasn't gone through yet. I think in the letter
there was a second letter like 8 hours later that said it had gone through. And they canceled my account. I had to reinstate it.
So it did personally affect you. You had to go through, you had to jump through an extra hoop to say, hey, no, I'm not from this tyrannical state. I moved somewhere a little more free.
You know, when we moved here, we got our Wyoming driver's licenses, which took like a few days and, you know, like an hour at DMV. It was so easy compared to California.
It took you a whole hour? It took me like 10 minutes at the DMV,
Us an hour to get our licenses switched over. No, it took less than an hour, actually. It took about 35 minutes, I think. But, you know, anyway, it wasn't like California where you have to make an appointment and wait for 4 hours and nearly get stabbed and listen to people screaming all day. But we took our California license plates out in the sticks and set them up and shot them with shotguns and then hung one up in the house and one up in the backyard.
Yeah, definitely. I remember seeing those. Yeah, they were also a beautiful thing. It was more than shotguns, too, though. Didn't you hit them with a few handgun rounds or rifle rounds?
Everything we had. We gave them everything. We gave them all 12 barrels.
All that you got, baby.
You look very relaxed and happy and good and healthy today.
I feel it. Like I said, it's summertime. I love the summer. I'm concealed carrying almost all the time now. I feel like I've found a summer configuration to still carry concealed and feel comfortable.
How you doing?
Well, you know, we talked over the phone. We don't want to go through all of our security secrets. But,
yeah, that's true.
I'm carrying at like 315, I guess, sort of on my the back of my butt, but not in the small of my back. And I have I usually wear a t-shirt that's a little larger that'll cover it up, and then a button-up, a short-sleeve button-up that's very summery. I found it at the store the other day, and I really dig it.
But you'll be fine if you stop, because you know the magic words to say to the police.
Well, I got my license. I went
the other
day. Oh,
you got your permit. You got your permit?
Yeah, that's got my quick. Permit. It took them a week. You know, they said that they wouldn't give it to me because I was in the Taliban, but then they just...
It took us 2 months,
took
man.
A week. Really?
It was weird. It took me 2 months, and it took DJ 3 months, and we applied the same day at the same time.
Huh. Well, I guess they're a little quicker in Washington. They're a lot more tyrannical, but at least, you know, they're quick with it.
Yeah.
They get it over. It's wham, bam, thank you, mammy. All they want is money.
Money.
Like we said earlier, I didn't even have to take any kind of safety class, didn't have to have a gun proficiency test, didn't have to have any kind of endorsement. They just wanted my cash, and then they gave me a little piece of paper that said I'm allowed to carry a gun. I'm allowed to have my Second Amendment right that I'm already guaranteed, but I need this little card to do it. And then I think it came with a big book of restrictions or something like that.
The big book of nanny.
The big book of nanny. Yeah, it's about a quarter inch thick, and it just has all the different – we have what's called RCWs here in Washington. It's like this – all these little nanny laws, and everybody navigates this sort of system of RCWs. And, you know, average people on the street will know about them, and they'll just say, oh, well, you can't do that because it's RCW, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, wow, it is really status to the core here.
So talk about Lupe Fiasco.
Talk about Lupe. Where are we at on Lupe? When was the last time we mentioned him? He's sort of an ongoing motif sometimes.
He's our mascot.
He is. Well, he called Obama the biggest terrorist. I definitely dug that. And
I like
then,
black folks who don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a couple rappers that don't like Obama, aren't there?
There are, and it's also a thing in black culture. One of the most notable ones, I think, is the guy who does the Boondocks, you know, the cartoon. You obviously saw the Dick Riding Obama.
I watched some Boondocks last night. I loved it. I like the thing about nigger technology. It's any technology you can't plug into a printer. Because niggas never have to print anything. It's just for niggas to talk to other niggas.
Yeah, and that's Samuel L. Jackson doing the voice of a white guy who says that.
Is that... I saw him in the credits, but I didn't know which voice he did. He does, what's the kid's name?
It's not Ed Wunstler, but it's his friend. It's the blonde guy who's Ed Wunstler the Third's friend. And Ed Wunstler is Charlie Murphy, Eddie Murphy's brother, who was on the Chappelle Show.
Is Wunstler the one with cornrows or not?
No. Samuel L. Jackson does the guy with cornrows. The other guy is the son of the really rich guy who's supposed to be like, you know, the big capitalist fat cat.
Yeah, they're two white guys that like ex-army guys that... dress up in mall ninja stuff and go rob banks, but it's always like banks that their grandfather owns, and they just give them the money, carry it out to the car, and then like, I think you did a really good job today. It was better than last time.
Yeah, and they were robbing all the houses in this rich white neighborhood so that people would buy his dad's company's security systems.
It's his grandpa, I think. And and like, you know, they drop their wallet at a robbery and the cop brings them their wallet at their house.
Right. But anyway, you know, obviously it used to be a comic strip, the Boondocks. Very politically aware African-American guy, obviously, who draws it. And it's just, it's great as far as hip-hop culture and all that stuff. And they totally rip on Obama all the time. The first episode of the third season was about Obama getting elected and how you shouldn't dick ride on Obama.
Dick riding Obama.
Yeah, they had this fake Will.i.am song called Dick Riding Obama.
But it's really Will.i.am singing it.
No, I don't think it is. I do not think he'd agree to that. No, no. And then Thugnificent, he's another rap character who's supposed to be sort of like Ludacris. He raps on it and says something to the effect of Dick riding for America, dick riding for rock. It's okay to ride a dick just as long as it's Barack's. So, yeah, they totally rip on them. And then there's this episode with the fried chicken. You see that one? There's the fried chicken virus. And everybody's getting it. They think it's the end of the world because they get it from KFC, and so everybody's getting sick. And
you know, a bunch of like totally Thugnificent rap type dudes have been posting our movie on Facebook. Like, it's kind of cool and surprises me. And it's like, I've never done any art that like tough looking black dudes like.
You don't know that. There could be some tough looking black dudes that listen to Bomb. It's possible, right?
Well, there wasn't Facebook.
Ah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that like? You've actually been in both worlds. You were in the media sort of world when there was no internet.
Yeah.
Was it all flyers and shows? And
it was harder, man. I mean,
when Bomb would play a gig,
we would go wheat paste 1,000 flyers out. And there was like a flyer war in San Francisco. Like, first of all, the cops were trying to bust you for putting them up. One time we got bust, like, the cops were ready to throw us in the car. They caught us. We usually ride away on our skateboards, but they snuck up behind us.
Nice.
They were about to arrest us, and they got a call over the radio of, like, a burglary in progress around the corner. And they said, don't do it again. And they jumped and, you know, took off to actually deal with the real crime. But, you know, because we do them on public property.
See, that wouldn't happen these days anyway. They'd say they're harassing you because it's easier.
They'd stay and arrest you because it's easier. Exactly. But we used to, like, we'd skateboard. We'd have a messenger bag with flyers in it, a can of wheat paste with a brush in it, and we'd flyer down the street and, like, flip the skateboard up against the telephone pole, and one guy would put his foot at the bottom of it. The other guy would climb up as high as he could and put him up really high. But we got really creative.
Why high? So hood rats wouldn't grab him and rip him off, or what?
Yes, and so other – like, there were citizens that were offended by it that would follow us around and rip them down before they dried. There were other bands that would cover them up, and there were cops – and people would, like, light them on fire. Like, they'd light, you know, metal telephone poles, they'd light all the flyers on fire. So what I started to do for a while was I would climb a telephone pole to the top of it, you know, like 20 feet up.
Nice.
And put them up there.
Like a
and
billboard.
Some of those were still up, like, 12 years after the band broke up.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I did. Fuck, I respect hell yeah. That.
Yeah. So there were flyers. There were fanzines, you know, there was Maximum Rock and Roll, which was kind of like the big international, you know, it probably had 100,000 of each issue. And actually, if it weren't for Maximum Rock and Roll magazine, punk rock wouldn't exist in the way it does, because it really laid the groundwork for having a network of phone numbers. Like, if you wanted to book a tour back then, I mean, there weren't even really booking agents. You'd, like, look at Maximum Rock and Roll, you'd see who's doing a show in Kansas City that month, and you'd call them. And it was often, like, a 16-year-old kid that lived with his mother, you know?
But, like, bars and that would have ads saying, hey, we're booking, call us right now, or we're booking from this day to this day?
No, it wasn't even that. It wasn't even that put together. It was more like people in each scene, in each town, would find a place to have shows and go convince them. Like, okay, well, you're a dance club, you're a disco, but on Tuesday nights you don't sell any drinks. How about if we have punk rock shows on Tuesday nights?
Okay. So it's local promoters, local punk rock cheerleaders.
And nobody ever got a guarantee. It was always a percentage of the door. You know, a lot. I mean, sometimes you'd play one town and 300 people would turn up, and you'd play the next town and, like, three people would show up. I remember we played in Phoenix. The lowest number of people we ever played to was in Phoenix. We actually had a $100 guarantee, but the owner of the club threatened to shoot us if we tried to get the money. You know, he's like, you made $8. Here's your $8. And there were three people there, but one of them was a writer for Spin Magazine who did a half-page article on us, so it worked out okay. But that guy was actually notorious for... there was another bar, too, where the guy in Pittsburgh, where the guy pulled guns on people or had a reputation of it.
But you'd been guaranteed it? Like, had that been guaranteed in writing or just over the phone, and you got screwed when you got there?
Probably over the phone. But, okay. You know, sometimes it was in writing, sometimes it wasn't. And sometimes it was like you'd book stuff so late because something else canceled that, like, it'd be in writing, but you'd get the contract in your P.O. box when you got back from tour, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not everyone had fax then. Nobody had email. There wasn't the web. Yeah, it was kind of like I paved the way so these kids today could do it easy. I mean, now it's like, you know, you put your music up on MySpace, you build a following on the internet before you've even played a show out of town, and then you get a booking agent, and, you know, it was tough. And it was like, we almost got beat up a few times for looking punk rock in Texas and Alabama, and it was rough.
It's just amazing how much the world's changed over just a few decades.
Yeah. But, it was tough back then, you know, we made our own t-shirts, silkscreened them, put out our own records, I remember the first record I did, we had a record putting together party. It was like we could only afford to get 7-inch vinyl pressed with no covers, so we printed the covers later at Kinko's on cardstock, and then had a party where we folded them together and then cut the top of the bag off of a sandwich bag off with a razor blade.
Right. Nowadays you don't even need any kind of physical media, you just put it online. And as far as t-shirts go, you put the design on, you know, Cafe Press or whatever, they make it, they build it after the fact when somebody orders it. You don't have to have boxes of t-shirts that you're handing out to people anymore.
I know. I must say I really liked doing that Skype in-person Q&A at the Philadelphia Film Fest.
Yeah, tell us more. Tell us more about the movie showing. What was the reception like?
There were like 45 people in a room that has a fire capacity of 50 people, so it pretty much packed out. And it showed at Pork Fest the next day to about the same number of people and was really well received at both places. And
did you do a Q&A at the Pork Fest one? Or
no.
No.
The Q&A at the Philadelphia Independent Film Festival was really cool because they had a camera set up. I could see the room and me on the screen, and they passed a mic around and asked questions. I want to do a lot more of that. I mean, it's kind of like touring without leaving your bedroom. And it's, you know, it saves on gas, it saves on money, helps the environment. It's green.
It's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. What kind of questions were people asking? Were people confused about the message? I know, you know, it was advertised in sort of the newspaper, whatever mainstream things were there, as a little blurb about things to do this weekend. Did anybody show up that, you know, just thought, huh, guns and weed? That sounds kind of interesting.
Nobody seemed offended. You know, there's some people that weren't as non-statist as we are, but they were on their way for sure.
Do you think we pushed them a little bit further?
I hope so. The movie's really getting out there and making a good impact, I think. We did not win Best Documentary, though, in the Philadelphia Independent Film Festival. But, you know, it's an honor just to be in it. Oh, yeah. Someone wants to show it in the Silicon Valley Film Festival, which
really?
I don't know anything about. I got the email minutes before I called you, Skyped you. But yeah,
that's cool. So a showing in California. You had mentioned another showing in California, too.
Yeah, somebody's setting up one at some environmental place up north.
There's lots of good pot information that they're probably interested in. Well, they're rural, too, so, you know, they might be just as gun-friendly as anybody else.
Yeah, my general feeling or observation of far north California, you know, up near the Oregon border, is it's gun-friendly, it's weed-friendly, but it's still kind of statist leftist a lot of times.
How so?
People vote for Democrats that they think are going to fix everything there.
Right. They still think laws are the way to go as far as
although that might
society.
Not be the guns people and the weed people. It might be the school teachers and tax eaters.
The tax eaters. Yeah. The people who are making money off of it, of course.
So Lupe Fiasco.
What did we say already about Lupe? Are we going to get more into Lupe? He did do the interview with Bill O'Reilly now.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And O'Reilly was being totally statist and being like, you don't say those things about the president.
Yeah.
Even though he all but says those things about the president.
I don't even know how he has any credibility this day and age. He was on with Stossel, or I forget who, it might have been Stossel, but somebody mentioned Keynes to him, and he had no idea about John Maynard Keynes or Keynesianism or anything like that. Had no idea what it was economically, and he's supposed to be, you know, like, people think of him as a smart guy who knows his stuff. Well, some people do. I guess the people who watch him, the No Spin Zone fans. He just had no idea about it, or economics, or how anything works, and was completely unapologetic about it. I think that was the interview where Stossel said, you know, yeah, Ron Paul's right, and you're wrong about everything. I don't know what the order of the about everything was. I think it was after Ron Paul's right, but I would probably agree that Bill O'Reilly's probably wrong about everything, too.
What do you call an attorney with an IQ of 60?
Your Honor?
Yeah. I posted that. Here's an example of how some people just don't have a sense of humor. I posted that on some Liberty site, and some guy replied, like, I would never call an attorney Your Honor. They don't deserve it. Blah, 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 blah. Like,
he didn't even get the joke.
No, he got it, but he was like, yeah, I didn't reply, but I wanted to be like, you fucking joke killer. And it's like, oh, so really, when you're in court, you're just going to swear at the judge. Let me know how that works out for you. You know,
There's the people who refuse to take their hats off and whatnot and refuse to stand and get thrown in contempt of court and all that good
stuff. More power to them, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Like we were saying earlier, you know, I think you should ignore opt out of the state and whatnot, but you can jive talk when your ass is on the line. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, I'll smile at cops when I'm pulled over. You know, I'll play the game. I won't let them violate my rights. You know, I won't let them search me. No, I don't wink at them. I won't let them search me.
You wink at them and roll your tongue around at them?
That's disgusting. No, this isn't Emily's Debt. I'm not trying to be a good slave in that sense. But,
you know that World War II joke, French rifles for sale, never been fired and only dropped once.
Yeah, I do know that. You know, speaking of rifles, I've been thinking about adding a semi-automatic rifle, a battle rifle, to my arsenal.
I have two. I just don't know what to get. I mean, the FAL I had was really disappointing. It was, first of all, it was too big for me.
Well, you've also been disappointed in your AK lately, haven't you?
Yeah. You want to buy it?
Maybe. Actually, I was thinking about getting, you know, either an AK or an SKS. And, you know, I guess the argument for the SKS is slightly more accurate because of the longer barrel usually. And it's a bit cheaper, but it's not even that much cheaper anymore.
Don't they only hold like 10 rounds or something, though?
Well, yeah, but there's a lot of them that are modded to accept a 30-round mag. In fact, I was at the pawn shop the other day, and they had three of them on sale that each of them had been modified and had 30-round mags. I hear the mags don't seat as easily as the AK. Like, if you had to pop it out and pop one back in, you couldn't do it as quick.
If I get a battle rifle, I want to get something in 308.
Yeah. I feel like, though... I mean, I got the Mosin. I can hit from long range with it, and that's pretty much that kind of a round, you know, to do that job. But I want the semi-automatic for closer range. You know, I think that's sort of why it's there. It's a carbine. It's something that's shorter and for shorter distances.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would technically call an AK a battle rifle. I mean, it was used in battle. When I think of battle rifle, I think of a full-size 30 caliber cartridge, like a 308 or a 30-06 or a Mosin.
Yeah, yeah. Although, for a battle rifle, too, I think another prerequisite is it's got to be semi-automatic. Like, I wouldn't consider the Mosin a battle rifle. I mean, I wouldn't want to go into battle with a bolt action.
My definition of a battle rifle is 308 or 30-06, at least a 20-round mag, semi-auto, and a bayonet mount. No.
Grenade launcher. Oh, that's not the thing about the SKS, is they all have grenade launchers.
I used my Mosin bayonet today. I was vacuuming the house, and I sucked up a cat toy, and it was just the right size to get just f***ing jammed right in the tube, and I couldn't blow it out or push it out, and I just took the Mosin bayonet and pushed it out.
Nice, nice. I'm glad to see it's got some use. Although your Mosin bayonet has gotten use on TV before. We used it to throw your Mosin into the ground at the beginning of the Firearm Freedom Act story I did back in
my friend liked that. My friend that interviewed me yesterday for his podcast.
Oh, had he seen it?
I showed it to him, and he's like, I really like the part where you throw the Mosin into the ground to draw the line in the sand.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite parts of that.
Did you get my note about our correction of we thought it was the current governor being gun unsafe, but it was actually Colin Simpson, the guy that ran against him?
I knew it was Colin Simpson. Did we say it was Matt Mead?
We thought it was Matt Mead. No, it's Colin Simpson, man.
Yeah, I totally know it's Colin Simpson.
Yeah, somebody walks out on the range while he's sitting there watching it while someone else is shooting, and he doesn't say anything.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely a big no-no, a big faux pas. We actually got emails about it when sort of Free State Wyoming people watched it on the news.
Yeah.
We had to apologize.
We didn't apologize.
Well, not apologize, but it's like, yeah, that probably shouldn't have been aired, I suppose.
It shouldn't have been aired because it's a bad gun example. But, you know, if he ever runs again and he's being a horrible person, maybe we can just pull it out of there. I don't know. I have nothing against the guy. He was pleasant. I don't know much about him. Actually, I think the reason he didn't win, it was pretty close. He almost won the primary, didn't he?
Colin Simpson?
Yeah, didn't he come in second?
Did he? I don't know. It was so split, I remember. You know, there was
like
four main candidates.
The reason he didn't win was a lot of Republicans considered him too close to a Democrat to run. But I think that's not economically. I think that was in, like, you know, marriage freedom and stuff.
It could have been. I don't remember his stances on that. I mean, the story we did was just about the Firearms Freedom Act. And, of course, they're all from Wyoming. They all, you know, paid homage to the idea that Wyoming should have its own rights as far as making gun laws and not following the feds' rules. Except, of course, the Democrat who thought it was silly.
He was like, any law on the book should be enforced. But, yeah. You know, Mead hasn't done anything so far that's made my life any worse. I'll give him that.
There was some legislation that I'm sure he signed that make things less free. I'm sure he signed the spice ban, didn't he?
But personally, I don't smoke spice. You know, there's the thing of, like, I'm in favor of all freedoms, but then I'm also a realist of, like, you know, if I was in favor of all freedoms only in a theoretical way, I'd still be in California because I'd be like, well, you know, they're more into gay marriage and they're more into weed, but I don't gay marry or weed, so I live in Wyoming because I have guns and don't like to pay a lot of taxes.
Stop stealing from me. Stop stealing from me. yourself. Begging from your neighbors for those folks you'll never meet. With a healthy dose of mashed potatoes and guilt with your meat.
Cannot eat in class unless you drink a lot. It's a socialist indoctrination for the happy tots.
Then you got the soccer prayer, everybody wins.
No more competition for American kids.
Redistribution of theft. Watch your country die. Redistribution is theft. While you just stand by.
Brandon normal talk is hate speech. Stealing more of our rights out from our reach. California failed social experiment. Give your money to the moms who'll never earn a cent. Get the federal powers that they ignore the 8th grade math. Wanna take it global. Make it all equal, but for some are serving others. Giving all our money to career welfare mothers.
Redistribution of theft. Watch your country die. Redistribution is theft. While you just stand by.
Stop stealing from me.
Stop stealing from me.
Stop stealing from me. Term limits. First one in office, the second in jail.
Four student volunteers build us labor camps when they think that they're building schools.
Here's the true neighbor, don't bother to fret. Email the White House about that right-wing threat.
Prepare the true Americans with chips in our arm. I'll bet the Nazis wish they had that little secret charm. As they
redistribution of theft. Watch your family die. Redistribution is theft. While you just stand by and cry. Redistribution of theft. Watch your country die. Redistribution is theft.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.